Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and today we're going to finish up our three-part series on getting started with unit testing. In part one, we saw how to add unit testing to a solution. We added a unit test project, and then we wrote test methods, and we saw how to run those tests and see if they succeed or fail. And remember, the whole point of unit testing is to test individual pieces of code, the idea being that you can more easily test your code and you can test your code more often. And then in part two, we extended this to cover a few things. The first thing we did was we looked at how if you're writing a XAML application and using commands, you can unit test the execution of the commands. So just to review, our application here is a calculator, it's a WPF app, and each of these buttons is tied to a command. And so what we were able to do is write a test that looks like this. We could execute the commands, and therefore what we're really testing is not just the code that's in the calculator assembly that actually does the math, but we're testing the user interaction. So this is a shortcut, if you will, to doing UI testing. Okay, so this gives us the ability, again, not only to test the code, but to test what happens when the user uses the application, because you really have to test both. And then we also saw how to do data-driven testing. So we had an XML file that contained data, and we saw how we could read that file and pass that data to the test, and therefore test various scenarios. And then what we finally saw was that we could go to test, analyze code coverage, and run all tests. And what would happen is Visual Studio would then run all of our tests for us and tell us what percentage of the code we had covered by unit testing. Okay, so what we're going to do in this, the final episode, is explore a couple additional things, and those are fakes, Microsoft fakes, and also how we can use Visual Studio Online to give us continuous integration. And what that gives us is the ability, when we check in code, to automatically have our tests get run. Okay, the first thing we'll do is look at Microsoft fakes. Now, I understand that fakes, the way I'm going to show it, built into the product, is a feature of Visual Studio Premium and Ultimate. So if you have those versions, you obviously get this for free. If you don't have those versions, you can still do fakes. You can write your own framework, you can use third-party fake frameworks, but what I'm going to show is the framework that comes built into the product. Okay, so if we look at this application, we notice that there's a random button, and the random button comes up with a random number. Good. So what I want to test is what happens if I enter a number, like 9, and then I enter 9, and then I add a random number to it, what's the result I get? So I want to test that functionality. Okay, so I'm going to write a new test method that looks like this. Okay, I'm going to test adding random numbers. So what happens when the user enters 100, presses the add key, then adds a random command, adds a random number. I'm actually not sure this is literally needed, but it's probably not doing any harm. So 100 plus a random number equals what? How do you test this? And remember, I'm not testing whether or not the random function returns a random number. No, what I'm testing is, if you add a number and a random number, do we get the result where we think we are? Okay, so how do you test this? Well, I could say it equals 100, but that's probably not going to wind up being true. And in fact, if we build this and now run this test, takes a while to run, and it turns out, no, we said 100 plus some random number is equal to 100, and it's actually equal to 140. So I say, oh, okay, I'll put 140 in there. Yeah. Will that do it? I bet you know the answer. Of course not, because we're going to get a different random number. It's still running, and it failed, because now the random number was a 45. So how do I test this? What I really want to be able to do is kind of intercept this random method call and say, for the purposes of this test, let's just say that random returned 10. Okay? So what I really want is the ability to intercept that. I want to be able to isolate that call and basically at runtime swap something else in. That's what the fakes give us. It gives us the ability to do two things. One is called stubs and one is called shims. And a stub is when you substitute code for code you own, and a shim is when you substitute code for when you don't own the code. And we're going to look at that in a second. So right now we want to be able to stub out the call to random. Now, let's understand what the random is. There's an add random command, and that is wired up to the add random method. And that calls random get random number. And this random is, if we look at the calculator view model, which does all the math, in its initializer, where is it? It takes an iRandom, okay? And we have an iRandom interface, which has a getRandomNumber method, and then we have a particular implementation of it, which this code is using. This code is using random that's contained in the .NET framework. And then, when we create a new instance of that calculator view model, we are passing in this built-in random. And that built-in random uses system.random. So what I want to do is intercept this. And I want to say, don't call system.random, which will in fact return a random number. Call a stub for that, which is going to return a value that I specify. Okay, with me so far? Hope so. All right, so to do this, we're going to use fakes. And to do that, we go into the test project. We identify the assembly that we want to fake out, if you will, right-click on it, and add a fakes assembly. And what we wind up with is calculator.fakes. This is going to give us fake methods or stub methods for everything in the calculator assembly. Okay, so now what we can do is we can add the following code. Okay, so the first thing I need is a reference to calculator.fakes. And then, watch this. So what I'm doing here, I'm creating stub random equals new, and I get stub methods, there they are, for everything in that assembly. Here's a stub for built-in random. Here's a stub for the calculator view model. Here's a stub for the iRandom interface. So I'm going to create a stub, a reference to that stub iRandom interface. And that stub random, stub iRandom, has a method called getRandomNumber. And what I'm going to do is set that to a delegate and say it just returns negative 10, right, for the purposes of this test. Now, what I can say is, all right, when I run this, this call here is not going to return a random number. It's going to return a negative 10 for the purposes of this test, right? Then the final thing I need to do is say calculator equals new calculator view model. And instead of passing in the specific built-in random, I'm going to pass in my stub random, again, which is an iRandom interface. And now this instance of calculator, the calculator view model, will use my stub random, which always returns a negative 10. And now, when I run this test, it's running, and it works. So what did we do here? What we did here is we said we're not testing whether or not when you run the application, random returns a random number. We're saying for the purpose of this test only, let's assume that when you clicked plus random, it returned a negative 10. Now we're going to test the rest of the code. Yes, we would still, in a real live scenario, need to test that when you pressed random, you actually got a random number. You might want to test that. But we want to test what happens in the rest of this interaction. So what are other uses for this? You can think about it. let's say you're making a call to a database and you want to test not that the database call returns the result you expected, but all of the other things that happen. So we can stub out the call to the database. We can stub out a call to a service or stub out a call to a web API or whatever and say that we're not going to take the time in the test to literally connect to this back-end data. We're not going to literally take the time in the test to wait for that connection to return. We're just going to assume it works and that it returned a particular value, and then we're going to test what we do with that value. So you could, for example, stub out the fact you want to test what happens if the user is not connected, and you've got a method that checks to see if the user is connected. You could stub that and have it return a true, stub that and have it return a false, and then you could test what happens when the user is not connected. Okay, so stubs, again, give you the ability to basically swap out code and the purposes for the test and assume that a call returns a fixed value so that you can test everything else that's going on in the method. Okay, and that's very useful. Now, there's another instance here. The flip side of this is the shim. So that's a stub, and it's called a stub because I own that code. I own the code that is the call to random. There's another option in here. We've got hours, minutes, and seconds. So if I add seconds, it's now 4 seconds past the hour, it will add a 4. If I click minutes, it will return 17 because it's 1:17 right now. And if I click hour, there we go, hour, it returns 13 because it's currently 1 o'clock. And I want to test what happens when I add 100 plus the number of seconds. So let's go into the calculator view model. And we see that we've got the add seconds command, and it is hooked up to this.addSeconds, which uses dateTime.now.second. Now, how do I stub that? I can't stub that because I don't own dateTime. I can't stub something that's in the .NET framework, in system. But what I can do is create a shim. So we do that in essentially the same manner, but instead of creating a fake on calculator, I'm going to create a fake on system. So I right-click on system, and I add a fakes assembly. And now I get system.fakes and mscorelib.fakes. Okay? All right. So now, back in my tests, I want to write this as a test method. And again, this is an instance of the problem, 100 plus the number of seconds, but I don't know what this is going to be. I got a 1 in 60 chance of guessing it, which means that 59 times out of 60, this method will fail. So what I want to do is shim seconds. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a couple usings up here. So I'm going to use system.fakes. And then I also need a using for Microsoft.qualitytools.testing.fakes. Okay? And now what I can do is come back down here and I can add the following. I'm going to add this. Okay. So, in QualityTools.testing.fakes, there is this thing called a shims context. And I'm going to create a new shims context and say everything that happens in that applies to this shim. And then because this fake is based on system, I get shims for everything in the framework. So I get a shim date time, which is basically my way of isolating date time, or essentially intercepting that call to date time. There's a now property of date time, so the shim date time has a now get method, and I'm going to set that to June 12th, 2004, 11, 11, 11, so hour, minute, seconds. Okay. Now, because this occurs inside that shim's context, every time I call add seconds, so every time I do this, I'm not going to go to system to get the date time. I'm going to go to my shim to get the date time, and this will return 11 seconds. Okay. So now, again, I can say for the purpose of this test, assume that when the user pressed plus sec to get the seconds, it returned an 11. And now when I run this test, takes a while. There's some overhead involved in doing the stubs and the shims. Not a huge amount, but it doesn't happen instantaneously. And now this test passes. So that basically, in a nutshell, is what the ability to use fakes gives you. The ability to make assumptions, and again, say for the purpose of this text, for this test, assume this method call returned something. You absolutely still need to test the method call in real life, but for the purpose of the test, because there are so many varying options, I'm going to say assume random returned a negative 10, assume seconds returned an 11. And you get that through the Microsoft fakes built into Premium and Ultimate. You can get that through through third-party frameworks, etc. Now, if you want to learn more about this, I did an episode of Toolbox with this that was unit testing with Microsoft fakes back in February. With Karsten and Ricardo. So take a look at that. 40 minutes on the subject. We obviously go into way more depth than I was able to go in here. Okay, so the final thing we want to look at is continuous integration with Visual Studio Online. And what this gives us, as I had promised you before, is that when we check in code, we're going to automatically run our tests. And if you think about it, that's a good thing. You check in code, you should build the application, you should run the tests. Fine, that's a best practice, but will we always do it? Well, with Visual Studio Online, we can make sure it happens. So what I'm going to do is go to my Visual Studio Online site. Mine's rogreen.visualstudio.com, and I'm going to create a new project, which I will call unit testing getting started. I could use an existing project, but I'm going to create a brand new one here just to show how to do that. It takes a few seconds to create the project. Notice the Visual Studio Online pricing is free for up to 5 users. You should absolutely check this out. If you're not already using Visual Studio Online, you should absolutely get an account, absolutely set it up. You get source code control, you get team rooms, you get a lot of collaboration. Even if you're doing nothing more than the source control and continuous integration, it's absolutely worth it. There are models where you can pay extra to get extra functionality, but the basic functionality is free. You absolutely should do this. Okay, so now I have this team project called Unit Testing Getting Started. All right, now I'll go back into Visual Studio, and I need to add this solution to source control. So I'll right-click on the solution, add solution to source control using Team Foundation. Okay, and I'm already connected to my Visual Studio Online account, and I'm going to add this to unit testing getting started. Okay. Then I will right click and check it in. Always add comments. Okay, now we'll check this in. All right, so now what we want to do is create a build definition, and that build definition tells Visual Studio Online to build the project and run all the tests after each check-in. So in the Team Explorer, let's just widen this a little bit to make it easier to see. There we go. We'll go home, then we'll click on builds, and we will create a new build definition. Okay, now the build definition will get a name. I'm going to call this BVT, where BVT stands for build verification test. That's a common term. You might also see build BDT, which is build deploy and test. You can call this anything you want, but we're going to have it be BVT at this point. Okay. Then we go to trigger, and the default is that check-ins do not trigger a new build, but I want continuous integration where check-ins do trigger a build. And there's a couple other options here, scheduling and gated check-ins, etc. But we're just going to choose continuous integration here. Then the source settings is we need to identify where this project is. What are the folders where we actually run the build? And that's going to be getting started calculator, right? So that one's active. So right, let's just check. We click here. Unit testing getting started calculator. All right, perfect. That should work. Okay. Now we go to build defaults. And the question is, what's our build control? We've only got one choice here because we're using Visual Studio Online, so that's the hosted build controller. So we'll just leave that alone. Okay, go to process. This gives us the ability to configure things, what gets built, okay, the project that get built, what are the tests, etc. And what we're going to need to do, come down to automated tests, and under run settings, there is a settings file. Remember what we did in the previous episode when we saw how to run data-driven tests, which are the tests here. We're loading up this test.xml file, which contains the data we want to use in the test. And to make that all to get that all working, we had to create a test settings file called calculator.testsettings. We need that to load as part of this, so we're going to identify that that should be loaded. Okay, so unit testing getting started and calculator, we choose calculator.testsettings. That will give our data-driven tests the ability to run. Okay, then there's a retention policy. How long do we want to keep the results? I'll just leave those all at the default, and then I'll save this build definition. The working folders include the root folder of your team project. Okay, well, let's go back here and let's identify in this root folder that we want calculator to be built, right? Okay, now does that work? Can only be mapped once, so let's get rid of this one. I guess we could have gotten rid of the other one. Either way, it would have worked. But at any rate, now this build definition is saved. Okay, so now we have this build definition. We have this direction, if you will, that when we check in, we should build and run the tests. What we now want to do is test this, so we can actually manually queue this up. Okay, so in the builds, we're going to take an action. I'm sorry, we're going to right-click the build, and we're going to queue a new build. So this is actually, we're manually going to simulate the idea that we have just checked in code. So we do this to test to see if the build works. Okay, so I'm going to queue this build, built for the latest sources on the hosted build controller, and now we queue this. Okay, so now we see that we have a build that is in the queue. Okay, if we double click on this, we open the build overview and we can see that it's currently queued, and this takes some time. It'll take some time depending on network traffic. It'll take some time depending on how many other people are doing the same thing. It'll take some time depending on how long it takes to build and actually run the tests. So in practice, I found that for this small project, it took about 3 minutes or so to actually queue and run the build. And this screen will refresh on a fairly regular basis. Okay, so now it was queued, now it's in progress. What we can do is go down to the build summary and click on this. And now we see a little bit more detail on what's happening. Now it's being compiled, it's being tested. More stuff's happening here. You can see how long everything takes. Typically, you're not going to sit here and stare at this. When you test, you definitely want to sit here and stare at this to get a sense of what's going on and get an idea of how long it takes. But in general, you'll check in, you'll run it, and then you'll go do something else and come back a while later and check the results. And when it's done, the page changes to build succeeded. And it took about 4.5 minutes. Okay, we see that things ran. Come down here, we see one test run completed, 100% pass rate. If we expand that and click on this, then we get a list of exactly what tests ran and whether or not they passed. Okay, so now what we've done is we've configured Visual Studio Online. We've configured our project to automatically run tests when we check things in. So now what we will do is we'll actually check something in. So let's make a simple change that will trigger that. Oh, let's do this. I want to test what happens if this returns a 50. Which of course it's going to work, but the whole point here is to trigger the check-in. Okay, so now we go to the Solution Explorer. We check this in. Modified fake value in, what's this test called? Add seconds. Add seconds test. Check this in. Okay, it's checked in. It's change set 155. If we come back to the home and we click on builds, notice that we have the build that completed and another one in the queue. This is going to take about 4 minutes, and it will do the exact same thing this one did, but it's going to run all of the tests and then will tell us whether or not they succeeded. Okay, well, we'll just let that go. We'll just obviously assume it all worked because we didn't really change anything that shouldn't have worked. Now let's go into Visual Studio Online and check these out. So we're going to Visual Studio Online, and we are in the Unit Testing Getting Started project. If we click on Build, here's the build definition, calculator BVT, okay? And we can look to see which ones are completed. Here's the one that we completed. We double-click on that. And look, we get pretty much the same information we got before. Expand here. All right, everything worked. Notice that no quality is assigned to this. So what we can do is we can add whether or not initial test passed, lab test passed, rejected, released, etc. So I'm going to say lab test passed. I'm going to assign a value to that. Okay, we can look at the log. We can look at the diagnostics. And we can see kind of what's going on. If we scroll all the way down here, yep, there's a bunch of information on what happened. So look at the logs, look at the summary. We can do all of this without necessarily being in Visual Studio. One of the cool things about Visual Studio Online is you don't actually have to start Visual Studio to manage the project. We come in here, view the build, the completed build. We can view the queued one. Here's the one that we just queued up, started about 2 minutes ago. Click on it, but nothing much happens because it hasn't actually run yet. But again, as a manager or as a team leader, you could just go to the Visual Studio Online site, see what builds have been, what build definitions have been run, see which ones are queued, completed, check to see what's going on. So what we've seen here is that by creating a build definition, you specify that when you check the project into Visual Studio Online, it gets built and then all of your tests run. And think about it, one of the things that we said was a great benefit of unit testing is it not only gives you the ability to test your code in discrete chunks, but it makes it easy to test it over and over and over again. And this is a perfect example of that. We're now going to run our tests, the entire suite of tests, every single time we check some code in. So you check code out, you work on it, you test it locally, you decide now, okay, this is ready to be added back in. You check it in, your entire suite of tests runs automatically, and then you can see how you're doing. You can see on any individual check-in whether or not you broke code, because you'll be able to see that when I checked in change set 6042, three tests now failed. And so now you know that it was the code in that change set that broke these tests. These are best practices for doing better jobs building software and being a better developer. And even if you're the only person working on a project, you get all the benefits of that as well. So that wraps up our three-parter on getting started with unit testing. I hope you enjoyed that. I've seen a lot of good comments from folks, and I think the general consensus is that you guys like taking a topic like this and splitting it into three parts instead of doing what would have wound up being a 90-minute episode. I kind of agree with that as well. We'll do more of these getting started. We've done an MVVM, we did source control, we did unit testing. What else do you want to see in this getting started series? Let me know. Always happy to hear from you. And I will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.